This is Pocket Presents, powered by Sleeper. What is up, Pocket Presents gang? We're back with another banger of an episode. We got week 11 action coming up. And for those of you that have been here for a while, we had a little subtle shift. We're testing something out. The film breakdowns that I've been doing on this channel, we actually moved this past week, tested them out on my own personal YouTube channel. So if for some reason you don't follow me there, subscribe to me there, it's just Kurt Benkert. We moved an all touchdowns from the NFL week video over there. We did a Thursday night breakdown, which was sick. Lamar versus Joe Burrow was insane. Crazy game. And then last but not least, we did a little Kyler breakdown. Kyler's kind of popping off, guys. 22 of 24 this past week, 260 through the air, one passing touchdown, two rushing touchdowns against the Jets defense that just keeps getting worse each week. But had some cool breakdowns, moved them over to my channel, see what the views and stuff did there as a test. But now we're here. Friday episode. This is Friday episode. I believe so. Friday episode. And we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some crazy excerpts that I was just made aware of this morning, actually, in the recording. This is Thursday. This is Wednesday morning. We're recording early this week. Micah Parsons, Tyler, what the hell is going on with Dallas?
I don't know. I want to break it down for, if there are listeners like you who are not aware of what happened. He basically said that when he's on the field, he's playing for guys like Zach Martin and guys who might be in their last year. Those are the types of guys he says he wants to hold a trophy for. I think the real inflammatory comment where he got himself into trouble online and on ESPN and shows like that is that he said legends like these put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did. What do you think about that?
Did he lie? I think he's telling the truth. And I think that, look, Micah Parsons is a dog. Micah Parsons shows up and puts everything he has into this. And just because he has a media show, a little podcast, big podcast, I think, at this point, doesn't mean that he doesn't care about football. This dude absolutely lives it, breathes it, loves it. You can tell by how he plays on Sundays. Dude is an animal. And he really gives a shit, obviously. And if he is playing for someone that seemingly doesn't give as much of a shit as he does, what is this respect your elders, respect it? Like, dude, these are men in a profession where some people are putting in more work than others. And it's been well documented over the years that there's been some issues with Big Mike as seasons start to slip. That's all I'm going to say. I'll leave it at that. It's been documented. That is a fact. That's a thing that actually happens. So for Micah to go out and say, hey, I'm doing this for guys like Zach Martin, his teammates that are putting it on the line every single day, for the guys that are super prepared every single day, it's a fact. Have the Cowboys ever looked like the more prepared team in the playoffs ever since Mike McCarthy's been there? Have they ever been prepared? Like, just because a player is willing to call it as it is, Micah Parsons, he makes a shit ton of money. He has a lot of respect. He's one of the best players in the league. And just because he's young and with it, social media-wise, doesn't mean that these big wig talking heads at ESPN or whatever can just shit on him because he has an opinion that he's openly willing to share. Times are changing. Just because a coach won a Super Bowl 10, 15 years ago under, the wing of someone who carried him there. And in what I want to say is, even though that was the coach, they still won. Like, that's also a true opinion out there that people have. Like, regardless of who the coach was, they won in spite of. Like, these are the actual conversations. So just because someone has a notch on their belt that they won a Super Bowl, like, come on. That is a lame-ass excuse, and if you don't show up for work every day, there's a lot of younger people that are coming to show up to work every day and want it more than you or hungrier than you, and that's just what it is. And I think there's a lot of complacency going on in Dallas that Micah's tired of.
Yeah, and to give Micah some credit here, all of those things can be true, and I know you have a particular perspective on it, Kurt, but what he's also saying is that Mike McCarthy can get fired, and until he's 60, 70 years old, could go get another head coaching job. Guys like Micah Parsons, he calls out Zach Martin, and some of these other older guys have a set window to play football, and they're grinding, putting their bodies on the line every week, something that Mike McCarthy isn't doing. And he's just saying he's playing for those guys, and he understands the perspective of those guys, and he feels bad for those guys because Mike McCarthy can go get another job. He'll be fine after this. These guys have a set amount of time that they can play, and I don't think it's a bad thing that Micah is putting those guys on a pedestal and calling out those guys. And maybe he was a little flippant with the way that he said it, but to your point, I don't think anybody's crying any tears for Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, not at all. And I think that's a great point. The window is small. These guys are at the top of their game. and the people around them that are in charge, that their sole job is to make sure everyone else is ready and you have an advantage and a game plan, they're not doing that. I had a show the other week, I did on a Thursday night preview. God, who was it? It was, well, anyways, it was a former player that played for Bill Belichick. And he had said that they never went into a game feeling like they had a coaching disadvantage. And that's why they played so confident every single week, regardless if they had the best players, best talent, whatever. Like, they knew that the best player on the other team wasn't going to beat them on their defense, like offensively. I think I said that right. The best offensive player was not going to beat their defense that week. They were going to double them. They were going to have cloud over the top. They were going to give help. Like, they knew that their game plan was going to get them in a spot where they had an advantage every single week. They did not have a disadvantage. You're looking at a guy with Micah Parsons who, in a roundabout way, talking about more work than Mike McCarthy ever did. Those guys feel bad for him. I don't think the Cowboys have ever had a coaching advantage. They've had a player advantage. And now that the player advantage is slipping a little bit, they definitely don't have a coaching advantage. I think that's kind of what this is talking about too.
I like that point. Well, speaking of dysfunctional organizations, the Chicago Bears fired their OC, Shane Waldron. It seems like just a matter of time before Matt Eberflus is probably gone. I want to ask you about how this affects the rest of Caleb's rookie season. But another interesting report came out that some veteran players also came to the coaching staff and asked that Caleb be benched. And I wasn't sure if that was for his own good or if that was because they thought Tyson Bagent gave them a better chance to win. But what do you make of what's coming out of Chicago?
This is a dumpster fire. Also, before we get to this, it was Logan Ryan the other day. That's who it was. I couldn't think of the name. Former safety. But with Caleb Williams, good God, the same person that wanted a share of the organization, he wanted a percentage of equity in the Bears. Was that a fact pre-draft that they were talking about?
It was thrown out.
Like, Caleb Williams right now, like we've been saying all along, and I got, for whatever reason, he had one good game against the it was the Patriots, right? Across seas. He had one good game against the Patriots and people wanted to come at me on Twitter about it. Listen, Caleb Williams is good off schedule when like they absolutely need him to be, but he goes off schedule more often than not. And he misses so many layups that it's just like, that's where this is coming from. If it is true that guys are asking for Bagent to play, it is because they know that their defense is really good and their window, like we're talking about, is right there. And they already know they can win with Bagent because he's going to stay within script. He can still scramble. He's a scrambling quarterback. He's a big dude. He's tall and fast. And he's got a big arm. Like, Caleb's not quite where they need him to be. And it's not all his fault either. Waldron, terrible job. Absolute terrible job. I also think that DJ Moore, I've seen a lot of discourse about him on Twitter. People want him gone. They love him. Like, there's literally a split line of the sand on DJ Moore. DJ Moore has not done anything worth what they've paid him to do. That's a fact. And does that mean that it's all his fault? No. But this offense doesn't look anything like they were advertised as before the season. And it's the OC, it's Caleb, it's DJ Moore. I mean, Keenan's getting older. Like, you can't expect Keenan Allen to go for 13 receptions, 200 yards a game every, like, that just doesn't, it's not going to happen anymore. Not playing in Chicago. But I think the whole sentiment here is, look, their defense is real. Like, their defense is really good. Their defense can only do so much when they're going three and out on offense time and time and time again. And they're losing the field position battle time and time again. Like, Bears defense is good. Offense sucks ass. If Waldron isn't the problem and Caleb goes in and loses this game to Green Bay and throws a bunch of interceptions or takes a bunch of terrible sacks, I guarantee you Bagent would get the ball out of his hands. And that's where I think, if this is true from these players, look, man, there's a certain style you have to play with in the NFL and it's not college. And I'm going to stand on that until I die. That's, you cannot bring the whole college game and whole college experience into this. And that's what it's been. It's been live and die by it. Well, they're what, 4-5 right now?
Yeah.
I believe. Going to be 4-6 after this week, most likely. It's all about to blow up. And Eberflus, he's the head coach. He's the defensive guy. The defense has done their job. But he's also, as the head coach, responsible for hiring an offensive coordinator that's competent, getting a scheme together that's competent, and also drafting. You had the number one overall pick. You picked Caleb Williams. I talked to Dan Quinn last week. Dan Quinn would have taken Jaden Daniels with the number one overall pick. He was number one on their board. Like, just because the media had Caleb Williams doesn't mean that's how the league saw it. And I'm not saying they missed, but Eberflus probably won't even be there to see it come to fruition.
What do you think is going to happen now that Shane Waldron is gone, because a lot of fans point to the offensive line being really bad. It just seems like Eberflus has lost the plot, whether it be at the end of that Washington game, you called out DJ Moore. Is this thing, can it get better with Waldron gone, or is Eberflus a sitting duck, and is this rookie season a wash for Caleb?
It can get better, but it's probably a wash. Like, this is the NFL, and all these teams that are starting to roll now are getting better. This Bears team, as they show up today, would not walk into any NFC playoff type of team and beat them. They just wouldn't. They'd have to get lucky that day. Now, the whole thing that I'm looking at with this, like, offensive, they're blaming the O-line, they're blaming the talent there, whatever. Like, dude, how many shit O-lines do we see around the league? That offensive coordinators scheme up something that actually helps them. They get chips on both sides. You know, they bring a tight end and a running back. They chip both DNs, get those guys out to the flats and empty. Like, there are answers. But I just think there's been a real stubbornness of how the Bears have been operating on offense, to thinking they can just line up and play ball, that requires no creativity to get guys with better leverage and better space. So do they have that in their building? I don't know. But that's to be determined. We'll find out on Sunday, and if they can flip it around that fast. But it's not necessarily just a scheme thing. It's like a, how are you designing the game plan? Because the scheme's going to stay the same. It's like the game plan, and what do you think it takes to win? Are you lining up a bunch of one-on-ones and think you're just going to be better than people? Or are you using shifts and motions? Like, we broke down that Bengals two-point play. They freaking lined up, no motion. We're just going to see if we're better than you, and they didn't get it. They did not have any play call advantage at all. It was gross. And that's what the Bears have been doing. It's not hard to look around the league and see, oh, wow, that team has it really easy. Their guys are always open. There's always space. And then some teams are like, holy shit, they can't get off the press. They're getting beat on one-on-ones. It's just gross.
One more thing I want to call out on Chicago. They have the toughest strength of schedule remaining. And this is something we called out at the beginning of the year.
Called
we said
it.
They have to play well in these first, call it 8 or 9 games, because mm-hmm. their schedule gets tough. They have the Lions twice, the Vikings twice, the Packers twice, the 49ers, and their easiest opponent, according to Tankathon, are the Seattle Seahawks, who on any given Sunday, I mean, they played close with the Lions. For reference, the next closest strength to schedule, the Bears are 7-0-8 winning percentage. It's Cleveland at 5-92. So by far, they have the toughest schedule remaining. I think this thing can get ugly quick.
It can get very ugly. And the craziest part is, at the beginning of the year, they had the easiest strength of schedule. Like, yes, their division is tough, but their schedule was set up for them to roll into this like 7-3, 8-2, maybe 6-4-ish. You drop that to the Cardinals. By the way, the Cardinals are playing really good football right now. They dropped, what, 2 games ago to the Cardinals. Winter is here. We said it was coming. Like, we thought it was around the corner. Winter came 2 weeks early because they've been dropping games. Now, I don't know. And the thing is, they play the Seahawks later, right? Like later in the schedule?
Yeah, I think so.
If their season's already tanked by then, they might just lose out. Like, they actually might not win another game the rest of the season. I'd be shocked if they don't grab one of the divisional games, maybe against the Vikings. But it's not looking good. Like, Bears fans, I'm sorry. But not really, because you guys are douches on Twitter to me.
I'll be in the house Sunday at Soldier Field.
Let's
hopefully
go.
Watching them lose to the Packers. So
wait,
it'll be good.
You're going to Soldier Field. I got to tell you a quick Soldier Field story.
Go for it.
So I was there in 2021 with the Packers. I don't know if you guys can hear my puppy. I was there in 2021 with the Packers, and we, like, the practice squad guys, we always sat in a different part of the locker room. There was normally like a little subsection. And in the Bears locker room, away locker room, we actually didn't get a subsection. We were in the storage, like, equipment room. So, like, a back room, like, weird, like, boxes everywhere and shit. And there were these countertops and cabinets underneath. And we were checking underneath the cabinets, trying to put our bags in there, because they were just going to be on the counters the whole time. And there is a old, old, crusty, moldy McDonald's bag under there. And these, like, Big Macs must have been 10 years old. Like, they were as hard as rocks. Like you, if you knocked on them, it was like a rock. And there were just these old McDonald's bags they'd left in the visitor's locker room for who knows how long. But it was by far the grossest thing I've ever seen in an away stadium. So Chicago needs a new stadium bad, and that place has fallen apart.
Yeah, there's a reason they have like 3 different sites currently in the proposal stage for a new stadium. I mean, they're trying to get out of there as fast as possible. All right, before we move on to the games, I think you're going to have to drink your medicine a little bit, Kurt. Russ is okay. Russ is cooking for this Steelers. You were critical of this move away from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson. He's got them at 7-2. I want your take on how this move has played out, but I think it also brings into question, is this more of a credit to Mike Tomlin and Russell Wilson, or is it kind of a middle finger to Sean Payton, who did not get this version of Russ in Denver?
This is a middle finger to Sean Payton because he didn't use Russ the right way. And I'm going to say right now, the number one thing that Russell Wilson has been doing at a high level is giving his guys a chance to make a play on the ball. If he has done nothing else, he's extended some plays, he's been accurate, and he's taken his shots. He has put in the ball in guys' vicinities where they can go be playmakers. And call it what you want, that's an asset. Because you see so many quarterbacks in the league right now overthrowing guys on fourth down, like Joe Burrow last week. Had 3rd-and-2, 4th-and-2, back-to-back, overthrew guys on go balls. One thing Russell Wilson's not going to do is overthrow somebody often. The catch that Pickens made in the end zone, Russell threw the ball behind him on a corner route, but it gave him a chance. Like, he's not trying to be perfect. He's just putting the ball up with good loft that's dropping down where his guys can make plays on it, and that is what he's bringing to this team. He's taking care of the football. He's giving his guys chances, and they are running the shit out of the ball right now and playing good defense. That's the Steelers' formula. And looking at this week, we got Baltimore -3. I think that the Steelers obviously can win this game. I think that Baltimore will win. I think they'll probably cover. But this game's going to come down to, can Baltimore find a way to jump out to an early lead? Because if they jump out to an early lead, that gets Pittsburgh out of their game plan. If this game is a grindy, like grimy Pittsburgh game where it comes down to the end, that's the game that I think Pittsburgh can win. But I don't think that Pittsburgh's play style on offense necessarily warrants itself to a shootout, like a real shootout. So this is going to be really interesting to keep up with. But if I'm the Ravens here, I'm pulling a, hey, if we win the toss, we're taking the ball first and we're going down and trying to score right away aggressively. Because the Steelers can win when they're playing in that same back and forth game, three-point game, one touchdown game, just like last week. That's where they want to live. They're not really a team that's going to run away with it. And they don't necessarily play well from a couple scores behind.
How worried about you are you about this Ravens defense, who again last week proved to be Swiss cheese?
This Ravens defense is really bad, and it doesn't get much worse than it across the league. Just on film, I watched the Bengals Ravens game, like we said on my other on my YouTube channel, and it was shocking to go back and forth from one offense to the other and what type of defense they were playing against. The Bengals defense, even though they didn't play like great, they let up a lot of points. They were contesting everything. Like, it was a bang, bang, tackle for 6 yards. Bang, bang, tackle for 18 yards on a crossing route. The Ravens defense? Dude, guys would catch the ball and have like 6 to 7 yards of space to do whatever they want. And if that's the game it's going to be, Pittsburgh will eat them alive. So I'm hoping that we see a Ravens team that at least shows up competitively, is willing to get beat deep, but isn't going to just give you the freebies underneath, because that's where Russell Wilson will thrive. You give him open space, he's going to hit the pass. So make it contested a little bit. Make Russ have to get out of the pocket. That's the game it needs to be. But this Ravens defense, man, if they want to go on a Super Bowl run, they've got to do something different. They've got to mix it up, or the Ravens are going to have to score 50 points a game.
Moving on, Kansas City at Buffalo. We have a great slate of games this week. Buffalo's favored by 2 at home. It's a little confounding. This isn't a primetime game, but this feels like the week if the Chiefs' luck was going to run out. If you want to call it luck, I'll get your opinion on that, but it seems like if there's a week, it would be Josh Allen in this week.
Give me Josh Allen, man. Give me Josh Allen. I love Josh Allen. He's probably my favorite quarterback in the league. Him, Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson, those are my top three. I like Josh Allen in this game. Josh Allen needs his get back against the Chiefs. He's gotten the short end of the stick many times. And I think this time in Buffalo, Chiefs undefeated, who just barely squeaked away to be undefeated, by the way. This is the week. Buffalo is the better football team, and Buffalo is a unit. They're a wagon. They're going to run the ball. They have a good O-line. Their defense plays really hard. I think this is going to be a problem week for Mahomes in that offense. And Josh Allen's going to put the team on his back. He's going to run somebody over this week. He might hurdle somebody and do some crazy shit. We're going to get the most interesting man in football playing ball in what should be a primetime game.
The most interesting man in football. I like that. Yes. Let's close it out with the Bengals at the Chargers. Chargers are favored by 1.5, playing good, sound football. What else would you expect from Jim Harbaugh? The Bengals need to win out at this point. I heard it said on another show that the Bengals had three games remaining. They would need to win five out of their next three to make the playoffs, and they'd somehow still believe that they could do it.
Yep.
Do you like the Bengals' outlook here? I mean, they will forever be the frisky team that if they just get a chance to get into the dance, they could do some damage, but then mm-hmm. they put themselves in these massive holes, no hole bigger than the one they've put themselves in this year.
Yeah. I think that the Chargers' defense is really good. Justin Herbert's playing really good football. He's taking care of the ball. His receivers are making plays, and they're running the ball. It's the Chargers are the Steelers of that side of the country at this point. Now, the Bengals, man, how can you look at them and not think, like, damn, they could put up 40 any week? But is their defense going to do anything? I actually like the Bengals this week. I think that the Chargers have no home field advantage. I think that the Bengals fans will probably travel decent to this. And I think that Joe Burrow, he's playing so well. Like, he's missed a few plays here and there, but I think Joe Burrow gets it done this week. I hate picking against the Chargers. It's something I've done way too often this year, and I've been wrong. But this one feels like, I don't know if the Chargers can score 35 points. And I think the Bengals can score 35 points on anybody. So give me the Bengals.
All right, let's move on to some picks. Great week last week. I mean, you're just man, giving away week. Winners.
We've been giving away winners, man. And how about this? Sleeper, our guy Jordan at Sleeper hit me up, and he said that we are now doing a $1,500 first-time deposit match. So if you've never jumped in on the $100 deposit match, and occasionally they did $500, if you're a big spender, you can get up to $1,500 first-time deposit match, which means you put in $1,500, they give you $1,500. You have $3,000 now to play the game, follow our picks, print some money. And I will just say our hit rate, transparently, has been very high this year. I think we're hitting 60 to 70% of our picks. Every single pick is double your money. So for us, just to be break even, if not profitable, we only have to go 50%. So we're keeping it safe. We're taking these just little base hits all year long. We haven't swung for anything crazy. And so I like it. I think we're doing it. We're watching ball all week. We're breaking down the film. We're looking at everything, and we're finding our favorite matchups. So that's been the formula, and I really, really like what's been going on. So this, at the time of this recording, the Thursday game's available, but we're not going to touch it because it will be long gone by then. Hopefully those picks have hit. Good luck to us in the past. But now let's talk about the rest of the slate, because we have, like we said, some crazy games. So let's go look at the games that we actually broke down. We have Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Right now, Lamar Jackson's passing line is set at 241. I think that is a little bit high. He has hit 280, 290, 290, 280 the last few weeks, but they've been against what I would say is a little bit subpar defenses. Denver's good, but that was just a really good week. I actually like Lamar Jackson to go over 225 this week. That is 1.47. I think he's very capable of doing that. I think against Pittsburgh, he's going to need to do that. If you want to be safe, take the 200. 200 is 1.19. That's actually, I'm not going to lie, 1.19 is really good juice for a passing line of 200. So we're going to go there. We're going to keep it safe. I want to make sure we hit again. And now another thing that we talk about a lot is receptions. We love receptions. You can get George Pickens to have 4 receptions against this terrible Baltimore Ravens defense. He's had 5, 4, and 5 the last few weeks. His 4 line is set at 1.33. So right now between these two, we're sitting at 1.58 multiplier. So we need a little more juice here. Ravens defense, that's probably the last of what we're going to do in this category. I'm not going to touch Russell Wilson. You never really know how that game script's going to go. And let's see, the Ravens linebackers. Now, this is a problem. Oh, they're not giving us Warren receptions. Eventually, before this game comes out, guys, if you want to go back in, I love Jalen Warren's receptions this week. If you can get it at 2, that's amazing. You'll probably get that. But we'll move on from this game. So we got Baltimore and Pittsburgh again. Lamar 200 and Pickens 4 receptions. Now let's move forward. We're going to go KC and Buffalo. Man, what a game this is going to be. Josh Allen has thrown for over 225 yards in every single game in the last 4. This season, let's see. He had a little bit of a rough stretch earlier in the year where they didn't really need him to throw a whole lot. They were kind of handling teams. This game, I think he's going to have to pass the ball a little bit. Now, his line's set at 245.5. We can go get it at 225. I think that hits. Or we can go down to 200. 200 puts us at 1.9. I think there's no way in hell that Josh Allen doesn't throw for 200 yards this game. So we can keep it there, keep it safe. And then last but not least, Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce's receptions have been absurd in the last few weeks. 10 receptions, 14 receptions, 8 receptions. Now, we can tease his receptions down from 6.5. We can go to 6, which I think he'll hit. 6 puts us at 2.6, or we can go to 5. 5 puts us at 2.1. Regardless, both of those I believe hit. I think 5 receptions is the safest. We talk about doubling our money. We talk about making good picks that are guaranteed to hit. I can't say it's a guarantee, but I do like to put $50 on these 4 things in these 2 games that we broke down. $50 pays you out $107. That's $57 in profit. Let's book it. That's going to be our pick for this episode. I like that. There's some others that I'll be teasing out and throwing out on social media throughout the week. But again, we look at these games and we break them down and we talk about what does it take for each team to do what they need to do. Then we go see the lines. Vegas sets the lines. That's the thing. If Vegas says Josh Allen 242, they expect him to have right at 242. That's like their prediction. So you go over, you go under, that's on you. For me, I like quarterbacks throwing the ball in favorable matchups and in games that they need to throw the ball. I would say our hit rate on quarterback passing lines, because the ones that we're picking are like very specific. We're not grabbing every single quarterback. We're probably hitting 80 or 90% on quarterback passing lines. We know quarterbacks, Tyler. That's what we do. So I like those picks. I'm excited for this week. I think it's going to be a good week. We got some good games. And man, let's go print some money for these guys. I like it. Also, remember, Kurt is the code for the first time deposit match. Leave a comment too. I'm trying to convince Sleeper to do a redeposit match. Buff that up a little bit for all of us that are not first time depositors that like free money. I love free money. It's my favorite kind of money. So maybe we'll get a redeposit match. $100 redeposit match, Sleeper. I'm putting it out there. Put it in the comments. You guys want it. Let's just, you know, convince them a little bit, pull their arm a little bit. But there you have it, man. We're going to pull Sleeper's arm and we're going to end this episode. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Let us know what you guys want to hear next. Also, fantasy, last thing. I will be doing a fantasy Q&A over the weekend on Saturday/Sunday on Twitter. If you guys do not follow me there, most of you probably do, but I've been doing these Q&As. People have been loving it. We're making good picks. It's been a good fantasy year. So I'll see you guys over there. Catch you next episode.